From the shadows of the radio towers, this is the Gay PHX Podcast. Your community radio on demand.
It's gonna be a good day. And everything is going to go my way. It's gonna be a good day. The sun is shining bright and it's here to stay.
Hey everyone, it's Billy. And before we jump into this week's episode, I want to share something I'm really excited about. From the day that Brian and I launched Gay PHX, it was never about building a platform around one voice. It was about creating a place where our community could tell its stories. For every interview, every event, every live stream, every podcast, it has been about giving our community the microphone. And that's exactly why today feels so special. I'm still going to be doing what I love most, sitting down with members of our community, asking questions, and bringing you the conversations you've come to expect from Gay PHX. But beginning with this episode, our friends from Amory Pack are stepping up as the anchors of the Gay PHX podcast. They'll welcome you in with each episode, introduce our conversations, share what's happening around the valley, and close things out with their own style and personality. Behind the scenes, we'll continue to be building every episode together. I'll still be conducting the interviews and producing the conversations while the pups help bring the entire show to life. And this is just the beginning. With the pups helping shoulder the hosting duties, it gives us the opportunity to grow in new ways. We've already started working on upgrades to the Gay PHX live stream, with more community updates, more regular check-ins, and more voices joining us throughout the day. Because that's always been the mission. Not to build a platform around us, but to build one for our community. So today, we're not replacing a voice, we're adding more of them. Now let's hand the microphone over to the pups from Amory Pack and get this week's episode started.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Gay PHX Podcast. I'm Pup Dante.
And I'm Pup Apollo, and we're both members of Amory Pack. We're excited to be joining the Gay PHX family as your podcast hosts. Our job is simple. Welcome you in, keep you connected with what's happening around our community, and help kick off the incredible conversations that make Gay PHX what it is.
And don't worry, Billy isn't going anywhere. He's still sitting down with amazing people from across Arizona, sharing their stories and bringing you the interviews you've come to expect from Gay PHX. We're here to help bring the show together and add a few more voices to the Gay PHX family.
If you're not familiar with Amory Pack, we're part of Arizona's human pup and handler community. We focus on friendship, mentorship, education, service, and creating spaces where people can be their authentic selves. Whether you're pup curious, a longtime community member, or simply looking to make new friends, we'd love to meet you. You can learn more about us and upcoming community events anytime at amorypack.com. That's AmoryPack.com.
Now, let's talk about today's episode. Billy recently sat down with Sydney Alvarez, an Emmy award-winning journalist who spent years telling other people's stories before deciding it was finally time to tell one of his own.
His new book, Your Soulmate Expired and That's Okay, explores heartbreak, healing, self-worth, and learning to move forward after the end of a long-term relationship. It's an honest and hopeful conversation about resilience, mental health, and discovering that even life's hardest chapters don't have to be the end of the story.
Before we get to that interview, we've got a couple of community reminders. This Friday night, Arizona Men of Leather continues a Roman holiday with Pizza Maximus. Come out for an evening of great food, great company, and plenty of Roman-inspired fun as the festivities continue.
Then on Saturday, don't miss the Grand Roman Forum, Auction of the Gladiators. It's the grand finale of Roman Holiday, featuring an unforgettable evening of entertainment while raising money to support the work Arizona Men of Leather does throughout the year.
You'll find details on both of those events, along with hundreds more happening around Arizona anytime at gayphx.com.
All right, that's enough from us.
Let's kick things over to everyone's favorite Desert Den Daddy,
Brian, with this week's Gay PHX Hot 3.
You're listening to Gay PHX, where community comes first.
Hey, 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 Phoenix, I have just one question. How many bed sheets do you own? No, seriously, because if Arizona Men of Leather have anything to say about it this week, At least one of them is about to become the High Roman Fashion. Roman holiday rolls on, and baby, they did not come to play. We've got gladiators battling with microphones instead of swords, pizza worthy of Caesar himself, and an auction where only thing fiercer than a competition might be the leather. History class never looked like this, and honestly, I'm pretty sure Julius Caesar would have been absolutely obsessed with a good drag show. I don't have proof, but I have a feeling, so tighten your toga, polish those boots, and if someone greets you with Hail Caesar, just own it. Phoenix, Daddy's Found 3. This is Brian's Hot 3, your glitter-drenched, toga-approved, Desert Den Daddy's guide to where you need to be this week. Hot pick number 1 is the Anvil Coliseum. Anvil, Thursday, August 13 at 9 p.m. Citizens of the Empire, welcome to the arena. Forget swords, forget shields. Tonight, victory is earned with a microphone. The Anvil Coliseum turns karaoke into gladiatorial combat as two competitors perform the very same song, battling not for survival, but for the applause of the crowd. Who will capture the audience? Who will become champion of the arena? And who will discover that maybe Whitney Houston wasn't the safest choice? Only one way to find out. Come cheer, come laugh, come sing along, because every gladiator deserves an audience. Hot pick number 2, we have Pizza Maximus. Again, Anvil, August 14th, Friday at 6 p.m. Now listen, I heard of pizza night, I've heard of Roman feast, but Pizza Maximus? Now we're speaking my language. As part of the Roman holiday, gather your fellow citizens and feast like emperors before a weekend packed with festivities. Whether you're arriving in a toga worthy of the Senate or looking like you just lost a fight with your fitted sheet. Nobody's judging. Comedia has always been built around sharing a meal. And somehow pizza tastes even better when everyone's pretending it's 44 BC. And besides, carb loading is historically accurate. I'm choosing to believe that. Hot pick number 3, we have Auction of the Gladiators. Anvil, Saturday, August 15th at 6 p.m. The Empire has saved your biggest spectacle for Saturday night. The Auction of the Gladiators is one of the signature events of Roman holiday, bringing together entertainment, fundraising, leather, and community for the unforgettable evening. And before your favorite gladiator steps into the spotlight, let's talk about the real MVP. Joe, the official bootblack, because every emperor knows, the difference between legendary and laundry day is a really good shine. Whether you're prepared for the auction, the toga challenge, or simply want your leather looking worthy of the Empire, Joe will have your boots and gear looking absolutely magnificent. Leave the sandals to history. The Empire deserves polished leather. And trust me, no one says, "I came to conquer," like boots you can practically see your reflection in. Phoenix, I love weeks like this because they remind us that community has an incredible imagination. Who else could take ancient Rome, add leather, add karaoke, add pizza, add polished boots, and somehow make it all perfect sense? Only us. And that's why I love this city. So this week, support the people creating those amazing experiences, thank the volunteers, cheer for the performers, compliment someone's toga, and if you see someone wearing a bedsheet with confidence of a runway model, don't question it, just compliment the draping. Because confidence is timeless, and apparently, so is accessorizing with curtains. Thank you for making Gay PHX part of your week. Thank you for supporting local venues, local entertainers, Arizona Men of Leather, and every organization working to create spaces where a community can come together. Most of all, thank you for continuing to show up, because events like these aren't built by one person. They're built by a community that believes in celebrating together. Now go forth, eat the pizza, cheer for the gladiators, and if you accidentally start referring to your friends as citizens of the Empire, don't worry, we're not judging. We're probably doing it too. Until next time, coming to you from the shadows of the radio towers, I'm Brian, your Desert Den Daddy, and that's what's hot.
Want all the details? Head over to GayPHX.com, your one-stop shop for queer events, promos, and everything happening in the valley.
History remembers the Empire. Legends remember the gladiators. But Phoenix is about to remember one unforgettable Roman holiday. This August, Arizona Men of Leather transforms the anvil into ancient Rome, where emperors are crowned, togas become high fashion, pizza is fit for Caesar, and gladiators battle for your applause. Experience a day at the Roman Baths, feast at Pizza Maximus. Then witness the epic finale, the Grand Roman Forum, Auction of the Gladiators. Join Arizona Men of Leather August 8th through the 15th at the Anvil. The Empire is calling. Will you answer?
This is what community sounds like.
This is Amanda Renfrew, enrolled agent with The Tax Person, with your tax year countdown. If you and your partner live in different states, which is common in LGBTQ plus relationships navigating work or family, you may face unique tax situations. Multi-state planning ahead of time prevents filing season chaos and unexpected bills. Get support with a free 15-minute consult at thetaxperson.com or look for me as The Tax Person on socials.
More stories, more voices, more pride. You're tuned in to the Gay PHX Podcast.
Today on Gay PHX, we're sitting down with someone whose career has been built around helping others tell their stories. But now he's sharing one of the most personal stories of his own. After a successful career as a multi-Emmy award-winning journalist, our guest turned the camera inward to examine heartbreak, healing, self-worth, and what it means to start over after losing a relationship that shaped more than two decades of his life. His new book, Your Soulmate Expired and That's Okay, explores the lessons learned from a 23-year hidden relationship, the realities of growing up gay in environments that often demand silence, and the difficult but powerful journey of learning how to love yourself enough to move forward. Please welcome to the Rainbow Tinted Microphone, Sydney Alvarez. Howdy, Sydney.
Hey, Billy. Thank you so much. What an intro. What an applause. I love it.
And I hope I said your last name right. I'm not very good at rolling my R's.
It took me practice. It works. Alvarez works. It all works. Even Hey You, that's fine with me too.
For listeners meeting you for the first time, who is Sydney Alvarez?
I'm just an average guy. I'm an average gay guy. And I just so happen to have been a storyteller. I know that nowadays the term storyteller is thrown around left and right with people on social media, TikTok, Instagram, what have you. But I was actually paid to be a storyteller. I was a broadcast.
A professional.
There you go. Yes, I was a broadcast journalist. And as a broadcast journalist, your career kind of bebops you all over the country. And the goal is to make it to the number one media market in the world, and that's New York City. And after some hard work, I eventually made it to the number one media market in the world. I grew up both in El Paso, Texas, and New Orleans. My time was split. My mother's from El Paso. My father's from New Orleans. And I think I got the best side of the world, so to speak. I got the Latino side and I have the Cajun side. So I think it's absolutely, I was very fortunate in that sense. And that's really who I am. I don't think, this is going to sound funny, I don't think I'm anything special. I'm just an average guy who happens to love telling stories.
So what made you decide that it was finally time to tell your own?
So at first, I was journaling, and it was more of a therapy session for me. And then I realized, scrolling through social media, there's a lot of groups out there, divorce groups, people from broken relationships, and then getting even more fine-tuned relationships with the LGBTQ plus community. And so as I was journaling and at the same time looking at these different online platforms, I realized that there were countless others like me experiencing heartache, experiencing pain. And I thought to myself, I'm no longer journaling for myself. I'm journaling for others. And the whole thrust behind the book is to help others that were like me.
So the title grabs the attention, Your Soulmate Expired and That's Okay. What do you hope people read into that as they see that?
When we talk about soulmate, it's that eternal love. It's that life ever after for an eternity with that one person. So I wanted to make sure that people understood the power of having that soulmate, that power of that bond with an individual. so powerful enough that even if it fails, for whatever reason, you are still going to be okay. And that's really, if you don't even read the book, if you just pick it up and see the cover and that you're involved in a relationship and that relationship ended, it's still going to be okay. It is just my way of telling you that pick me up, pick up this book, because I know that you are hurting and I want to walk through this pain with you and let you know that it's going to be okay. So that's what's behind the title.
My understanding is that the relationship lasted 23 years and it ended without closure. Is that correct?
That is correct. And that's a really simplified version, right? As gay people, and I'm going to talk about myself, I should say. As a gay individual who grew up in the 80s, identity was not there per se, right?
Right.
The LGBTQ plus identity. There weren't people out there that we could identify with. There weren't people out there that were advocating necessarily for us. They were, of course, we have our champions out there, but did they make it to my household? No, right? Not my little household in El Paso, Texas, or in New Orleans.
They didn't hit a mass media to be prevalent. They were rare, but not, I'm trying to think of the ones from Hollywood Squares. And they were there, but no one ever talked about it.
Yes, or if they were there, if they were in pop culture, the LGBTQ community was either very stereotypical, they were the butt of jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were the punchline, or they were the villain, or they were the victim. So growing up, I never identified as the joke. I never identified as the villain, and I definitely did not identify in that negative persona, so to speak. So there weren't those people to look up to, those role models, right? So for myself, really, trying to get this book out there and advocate for our community and help those who may be brokenhearted was really my goal.
What's the most difficult part about sharing these experiences publicly?
I'm very transparent and my life is very messy and I'm very raw. I'm very, as I mentioned, very transparent with my experiences. I was in a 23-year relationship, but my relationship was even more complex than that. He was married. Oh. He was living a closeted life. And so his closet forced me to go back into my closet. And what made it very, even more challenging was that I was a public persona. I was a broadcast journalist. I was coming into people's homes that during the newscast. And I had that. I'd walk down the street and people knew who I was. They didn't know who my partner was. And they didn't know that he was secretly married. And they didn't know that his marriage was a complete facade, a marriage of convenience. She knew that he was gay. His family did not know he was gay. His employer did not know he was gay. Where I was the complete opposite. Everybody knew everything about me.
Wow. This sounds like a storyline from the morning show.
Yes. If you watch telenovelas, it definitely sounds like a novela in those Spanish TV shows. That's exactly what it sounds like. And so that's why I wanted to really talk about what transpired of me. And when my breakup happened, I had no clue what was happening. And in 24 hours, my world was completely destroyed. And to take it a step further, I became suicidal. And I attempted suicide twice. And that really was the full thrust as to why I wrote this book. I wanted to make sure that people, anybody who was out there hurting, just like me, because of a divorce, because of a breakup, was not contemplating on hurting themselves. I wanted to stop that feeling. I want those individuals to know that it is going to get better and that they are not alone. In fact, my opening line in my book is, "You're not alone." And so I really wanted to stress this to people.
Is that they just see the perfect picture on the TV that's shaped it and crafted to tell the story that needs to be there. But life is messy regardless. That's not to say anything about a particular person or anything like that. I'm wearing a t-shirt right now that actually says I'm WTFing my way through life. because it's a true story.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you bring this up because it is messy and very important to be very authentic and raw about what's taking place. Because, you know, for me personally, yes, my relationship failed. And yes, I contemplated suicide twice. But I wanted to make sure that I was open about my situation. Because if someone like me, who's perceived to be successful, educated, and got everything going for him,
right,
can fall so quickly through the cracks, I wanted to make sure that people knew this, that I was literally walking on eggshells.
The whole news, entertainment, info, however you want to classify it now, is such a machine that it just chews you up.
Absolutely. And then you add in social media, for example, right? Social media nowadays is so curated. What people are posting, right, they're wanting to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. And you're seeing these posts of all these perfect people with their perfect lives. And my book is out there to tell everybody that's not perfect.
That's not the reality, right?
Yes, that's not the reality. It's a huge mess. And don't let curation lead you into the wrong path.
As someone who grew up in the 80s as well, I'm very upset that the sci-fi writers did not get it right, that social media would be the dystopian future. Bring it.
Instead of that meteor that's flashing down on us,
So how did those experiences that you went through, how do they make you view yourself in relationships now that you're, are you on the other side of it? Is it a continued journey? Is it a continued battle?
My book is, it's part memoir and self-help book. I prompt people in my book. I actually have pages that are blank, that are lined after each chapter, where I'm prompting the reader to, let's go through these feelings together. One of my chapters may be, one of my chapters is own your wrongdoings, right? And it's okay to feel guilt and shame, but don't live in those elements. You don't want to live in those elements because you're going to stay stuck at that moment in time. And so in that chapter, as it's illustrated with my own personal situations that transpired, at the end of the chapter, I will ask you, okay, how are you going to work through your guilt and shame together? How are you going to move forward? Why do you still feel the guilt or the shame? Now journal. And I literally prompt the reader at that point, journal your feelings, talk about them. So think of it as a working therapeutic self-expression book.
At a certain point, when we do interviews like this, it's preaching to the choir. It's preaching to people who are looking for help, looking for something. But we know when you're living in that situation, isn't there a certain amount of deniability that this isn't me? This isn't what's happening to me. This isn't relevant to me, even though it is?
Yes, and I speak from experience, and I think everybody speaks from experience. The tips, my book is Your Soulmate Expired, and That's Okay. But the second part of that title is 8 Tips to Recover from a Severed Relationship. And the tips that I offer, I'll be very frank, they're not groundbreaking. They're not groundbreaking at all. In the book, I say, I am not a therapist. I'm not a psychologist. Heck, I'm not even a good writer. You might find some prepositions in there that may be terrible, right? But this is my life. This is what worked for me. And this is what I'm sharing with you, right? My very first chapter is respect yourself. How often as a child did an adult or a friend share with you, hey, respect yourself. Why are you letting somebody talk to you in that fashion? Why are you doing certain things? Because in the end, you know it's going to hurt you. So respect yourself. It's not groundbreaking. You hear it all the time, but we don't adhere to it. We really don't understand the power of how you go about to respect yourself. This one's interesting. So one of my chapters is use your TV voice. And you can relate to this, Billy, because you use your radio voice, right?
Yes.
So my ex used to always tell me when he was upset, he'd say to me, Sydney, stop using your TV voice on me. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm just talking to you. I'm not trying to change my voice. I'm not trying to act like another person. It's just me. So I took what he perceived as a negative or tried to perceive as a negative towards me using this TV voice. And in the chapter, I turned it around. It's not a negative. It's a power. It's one of my power abilities. It's one of my superhero powers. So I implore to my reader, use your TV voice, whatever that power is. Maybe your power is your ability to make people smile. So use your power of helping people smile. In my particular case, it was using my authority. My TV voice was my authority. It was how I was going to take control of what was happening around me, and that's how I'm going to push forward. And then I'll prompt you in that chapter. I say, okay, great. Tell me how you're going to use your TV voice. What are you going to substitute as a power? My power is the TV voice. Now tell me your substitute. Journal it. Write it down. And that's pretty much how the book really goes through. I share personal experiences that are really heartbreaking, and I try to turn them around to make them positive, to help not only myself, but to help the reader that's going through this journey with me.
You have another chapter that explores relationship hierarchies. How do you hope readers take away from that part of the conversation?
So you're going to enjoy this, Billy. So I used to love watching and listening to the Casey Kasem Top 40.
Yes, songs. Instead of Casey.
Yes, there you go. In my case, I was a video guy, so I used to watch the top 10 videos of the week or the top 20 videos of the week by Casey Kasem. Anyway, you always had songs that were going up to the top of the charts and songs that were making their way down from the top of the charts. My relationship hierarchy was based on that. In my mind, my number one relationship was my former partner, the person who broke up with me. He was number one. Number two, I had my mom. And then number three, my dad, or maybe it varied, right? There was always, the top 10 was always changing. So there was a hierarchy in relationships. Who am I going to put the most of my energy into? That was my previous partner. He was the one that was at the number one spot. So in the chapter of relationship hierarchy, I'm trying to illustrate to the reader that you are not always going to be number one in that relationship. For example, my former partner was number one. I obviously was not number one in his ranking. And so it's important that we understand where we fall in these rankings. And that's my illustration for that chapter. And I share what happened to me in that particular chapter and how I tried to overcome certain situations and scenarios.
So for people who's listening right now, carrying their own heartbreak, what's something that you wish someone had told you during some of your darkest moments?
It's not necessary that I wish someone had told me something. I wish, and I talk about this throughout my entire chapter or throughout my entire book, people knew who I was. I had extended family. I had extended friends, the general public. Whether I was walking in El Paso, Texas, New Orleans, Dallas, Texas, New York City, people knew me from my TV background. What I wished people had done is much simpler than what people may have told me. I wish that somebody could have held my hand and said, it's going to be okay. Sometimes you don't have to say anything to a person. Sometimes when somebody is grieving, like a relationship, when somebody passes away, you're allowed to grieve. But they don't extend that grief process to when there's a breakup. Somebody breaks up, they should be allowed to mourn that loss. And so when you're mourning a loss, sometimes you don't have the right words to say. So in my particular situation, it's not that I wanted them to say anything to me. It would have been fantastic if I had somebody who could come up to me and just hold my hand and even just sit there in silence. That's what I was lacking when my relationship fell apart and when I was going through all this.
So were you isolated from your friends? Did your friends just not know because you were keeping it hidden because you didn't want them to ask questions and you didn't want them to know you actually had this relationship? Or were you just so busy? Because I understand how busy life in broadcasting gets that you don't have friends outside of work. You have this work family to a certain degree.
That's a great question and very intuitive. So my energy was completely devoted to my partner. So I lapsed in other relationships. I didn't cultivate all those relationships, all those friendships that I should have. And so when the breakup happened, there weren't that many people that I could actually turn to or confide in. And I can share this story that I talk about in the book. So when the breakup happened, I went to go seek therapy, which I absolutely advocate for. And I walked into the therapist's office. And when I walked in, the receptionist looked up and said, "Hi, Sydney, are you here to do a story?" So she recognized me from my TV days. And that completely, I was not prepared for that. That completely threw me off. I whipped around and left. Because I was going into this therapist's office to try to seek help, try to be a little bit more concealed, so to speak.
Right.
But instead, I was immediately recognized, and so I was deflated.
You were trying to focus on you, and then all of a sudden, everyone was focusing on you. Not literally everyone, but the people in the room, who that feels like everyone.
Yes, Billy. So, so you can imagine you're trying to go in and find some help. And you walk in and you're identified and they're thinking you're walking into work. And so I wasn't prepared for that. I was not prepared for that. And I share those stories throughout the book, situations that transpired in my life. I can share some more information. So my former partner, who was married, had a daughter. And I was in her life since she was 1 year old. So she grew up knowing me, and I was in her life. And I talk about how I was there at the birthday parties. I was there for her dance recitals, but I was always introduced as the friend. And of course, after a while, people know, people talk, people understand. And so I share this in the book because it's important when it goes back to having that respect towards yourself and having that confidence, that love for yourself to build up that self-esteem.
How do you know when you've truly started healing rather than just simply surviving?
I think it's individually based, but for me, I can say that I am still healing, right? Because after being involved in a 23-year relationship, it takes time. And when I say still healing, more about myself, how can I be a better person? How can I learn from my mistakes? Those type of questions. But learning the difference between surviving and healing, to me, it boils down to, I knew that I needed to live. And to me, survival was, I need to live.
So this might go right in hand with that. What did learning to love again look like after believing that a major chapter of your life had ended? I guess technically it was a chapter that ended and a new one was beginning. How do you realize that you're looking at a beginning?
Oh, absolutely. I have two chapters in my book where I talk about this. And so in chapter 9, I titled it, "What Value Do You Bring Into My Life?" And I add, it's the rule that I live by now. Whenever I meet somebody, if it's a friendship or professional or romantic, I ask myself, what value is this person going to bring into my life? And I encourage the other individual to ask the same question of me. What value am I going to bring into their life? And to me, those are the tools that are needed to start building a healthy relationship, right? Are all relationships 50-50? Ideally, we want them to be, but they're not always that way.
Again, so life is messy.
Life is messy. Going back, life is absolutely messy, yes. And then to piggyback off that chapter, I end the book with the chapter I call Love Harder. And love is not easy. Love is not romantical. Love is not a fairy tale. And when I say love harder, I mean embrace it wholeheartedly. Yes, you were destroyed at the beginning in chapter one, and you're starting to mend your ways. You're going through 3, 4, 5, chapter 6, chapter 7. But when you get to the very last chapter, and when I say to you, love harder, I am saying to you, open your arms, full embrace, and just love harder. And I'm hoping that I leave the reader on a positive note to believe that they can love again.
That's awesome. Now, you describe the book as being visibility and the power of being seen. Why is that such a powerful concept within the LGBTQ community?
So part of the things that I wanted to get across in the book is the fact that we need those role models, right? And I'm not saying that I'm a role model. I'm just saying that this is what transpired with me. And I'm hoping that my messy experiences can help somebody else. And in the process of telling my story, in the process of telling my narration, and being very specific with things that took place with me, not only that were negative, but positive things that transpired with me, that I'm hoping I can influence others to be their better versions. For example, in the book, I talk about how PFLAG, you know the organization PFLAG?
Yes.
How they were so instrumental in my life. When I was in undergrad, I went to Loyola in New Orleans. So when I was in school, I received a PFLAG scholarship. And it was one of the very first times that I was recognized in a positive way for being gay. And so I love talking about this because my entire life leading up to that point, whenever I tried to let people know that I was gay, I got very negative reactions. And having PFLAG not only recognize me in a positive way for being gay, but also giving me a scholarship, it just did so much for me. And so I am hoping to use that experience and share it with others that they can also have positive experiences being part of the LGBTQ plus community. And I'll take it back. I'll take it back a little further into my youth. When I made being Latin, they sent me to catechism. And
you're going to have to explain what that is to me. Sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry. Wait, Catholicism, they have you go to your catechism, your confirmation. You do this when you're a child, you know, the steps, the many steps in Catholicism. And
I don't, but okay. I grew up in a very unique, I can sum it up like this. My dad said, religion is deeply personal and you'll find yours. That's it. Did not tell me anything about his. The rest is all I just picked up from everything else around. So.
Oh, okay. I love it. I absolutely love that. So in Catholicism, you at a very young age, they have you do your catechism. And it's 2 years of Bible study, pretty much is what that is.
Okay.
And at the end of the 2 years...
Is that what you would do during summer? Would you do that all year long? Will you do that like after school? I saw some kids do things, but I didn't.
It's different everywhere. But for me, it was during the summer. At the end of our catechism education, you confess to your priest. And so I was 11 years old. And when you confess your sins, at 11 years old, what possibly can you be confessing to, right? So I was just kind of, I stayed up late. I watched some TV. I was fighting with my sister.
I didn't put back the G.I. Joe toys.
Yes, exactly. During my confession, I said to the priest, I think I'm gay. And the priest whips around and tells me that is a mortal sin. When it comes to Catholicism, there's different stages of sin or different severities of sin. Mortal is the worst sin. It's up there with murder.
Oh, wow.
So so the priest turns around and tells
me. So at 11 years old, you're being told this.
Yes. At 11 years old, I'm being punished for being honest. And it was the first time I ever told a soul that I was gay. And it was to a priest. And so he whipped around and punished me for being gay. So part of my punishment, my penance, the priest said I had to say 300 prayers It was 100 Our Fathers is one prayer, 300 Hail Marys is another prayer, and 300 Apostle Creed. So picture an 11-year-old child sitting at the church pews trying to count with his fingers 300 prayers.
I'm like, do they give you a counter? This is... But then who was also counting then? Or do you not it's think of that me. As a child? Was, you're no, not, I, no one's checking your work.
Yeah, he's taking my word, right? By golly. And my last name is, right? So it starts with the letter A. So I was the first one to confess in the class. But I was the last one to leave the church pews. I was still sitting there. And my catechism teachers were just standing there thinking, what in the heck did this little boy confess that he's still sitting there? I told my mother this story years later, and she was so upset by it. She said she had wished that I had told her something, and she said she would have gone and have a few words with the priest. But and I talk about that in the book, and I talk about my upbringing. I had a very supportive upbringing. I wasn't kicked out for coming out gay. My mother and my biological dad and my stepdad were supportive. But there were little things as a child that showed me that being gay wasn't necessarily the best thing, so to speak. Remember the TV show Three's Company?
Oh, my goodness, yes. So, Jack Tripper, who wasn't even gay.
Jack Tripper. The character Jack Tripper pretended to be gay, but he wasn't gay so that he could live with these two women platonically. My dad would sit there watching that show, and he would say the F word. Now, it wasn't directed to me, but the F word, he'd say it to the character, but I was in the room. Was it necessarily directed to me? No, I don't think so. I hope it wasn't directed to me, but it was said and I could hear it.
Right.
And so that kind of framework, that kind of pattern molded me as a child. And hence why one of the chapters is learn to respect yourself, learn to love yourself. And that was very important for me to get out. And I share that in the book.
That's really interesting to me because I, as I said, no real religion. So there wasn't any litmus test for belief or any of that to me. I did know that being gay and open wasn't necessarily easy. So I kind of kept it to myself for that reason. But I remember being surprised because I thought that my father would be more understanding and was a little bit more liberal until I went to go visit him while he was in Oklahoma City. And I came down with my straight friend who was very sexy and I had a crush on. That's a whole different story. But so sexy that everywhere he went, women would fawn over him. He'd go to the gay bar because women would buy him drinks and guys would buy him drinks. He was that kind of sexy military guy. So it was great that I was hanging out with someone so butch, but when I was going to tell my father that I was going to come out to him, one of those Sally Jesse Raphael episodes of I'm confessing my love for my straight friend, blah, 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 which I did not have. I had a crush, but I knew exactly where I stood, and I also knew exactly who he was, and I did not need whatever Petri dish he was carrying around. But my father came home, and he was so mad about that. I'm like, this is not happening this trip.
We all have those stories, don't we? Yes, we do. Absolutely. And then it's about really what we do with those experiences. And then that, going back to the book, that's what I wanted to capture. And what you just shared, I have so many different situations that have transpired that I talk about in the book to just try to make it relatable to people. Now, obviously, this is coming from an LGBTQ+ perspective, but this book is a manual for relationships, and it doesn't matter your sexual preference, gay, straight, what have you. It doesn't matter. The universal feelings and situations are there.
Yeah, the role of who does what doesn't necessarily matter because it's still the same feelings and heartache and sacrifices and stuff that you make, regardless of the gender, regardless of what. There are plenty of stories that we've heard about as far as also women that have had relationships with married men. It's all kinds of relationships out there.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and it's also about finding inspiration and where you find your inspiration. Are you familiar with Veronica Franco? She was a courtesan in Venice. You familiar with her?
I can't say that I am. The name sounds familiar, but probably just because it's Veronica and it sounds fancy.
So I bring it up because in my book, I talk about it. And Veronica Franco was a courtesan, I want to say 15th, 16th century Venice. And she wanted more out of life. She was educated. And she knew that in order for women to advance, they needed to learn how to read. They needed to learn how to conduct business. And back then, women were not allowed to do that unless you were a courtesan. Courtesans were the most educated women at that time. They were consulting the generals. They were speaking to the politicians. So they had to be learned, so to speak. Anyway, in my book, I talk about how I traveled to Venice and I admired Veronica Franco's strength and her how she was very vulnerable, but at the same time, she used her knowledge and her appetite for education to advance women and advance all those who were persecuted because of the Crusades. And I found strength in that. And in the end, it's really all about how we are going to try to build our own self-esteem, build our own inner strength. To quote somebody else in pop culture, right? What does RuPaul say? If you can't love yourself, how the heck are you going to love someone else?
Exactly.
It's very simple.
Right.
And we just have to find this inspiration from my particular journey. I found it through Veronica Franco, which is also filmed now. It's one of my favorite movies. It's Dangerous Beauty. And you can look it up, and completely well done, great movie, and obviously it's based on her real life.
Oh, I'm definitely going to have to check that out. I feel a kindred spirit as we try and build media here and connect people with different stories in different ways to educate themselves and learn more and expand and meet people like you.
And that's all it is. It's all about what you relate to, right? Drawing in, you don't have to look far to draw inspiration. One of my chapters in my healing journey is believe in vampires. And I draw inspiration from my roots in New Orleans. I grew up in New Orleans. I spent so much time in New Orleans. And I truly believe that there are people out in this world who are just going to drain you of your energy. They're always going to want more and more from you. And until at one point, you have nothing left to give. So in the book, I tell people, look out for these energy vampires, so to speak. Make sure that you are aware of what is happening around you and the give and take in a relationship. It shouldn't always be take, right? Somebody at some point has to give a little too.
Exactly. So what's next for Sydney? You're here in town. Welcome to Phoenix.
So number one, thank you so much. I really am so excited to explore this wonderful city. It's a big city. I did not realize Phoenix was the largest city in America. It's so big. I am in a condo in Midtown. They told me it's Midtown. I live here now. And so what's next for me, for immediate purposes, getting to know this really wonderful city, but working on my second book. I'm really excited about doing this. I hope to have my second book come out in early 2027. And for now, really just speaking to people and going to different engagements and letting people know that you can recover from a broken relationship and really encouraging people just to love harder.
Awesome. Sydney, thank you so very much for joining us today, for sharing your story. How can people also get a hold of your book?
You can go to Amazon. All you have to do is search Your Soulmate Expired, and that's okay. You can also search me by name, Sydney Alvarez. I am on Instagram, TikTok, and all those social platforms. I'm very transparent on there as well. Or you could also go to my website, yoursoulmateexpired.com.
Excellent. Sydney, thank you again.
I really appreciate you, Billy. Thank you for your time.
Another reason we love this community.
I'm Daddy Dave, your friend in the fight to end stigma, and I'm the founder of Team Friendly, here today to talk about substance use and sex. Let's talk about sex while using substances without judgment, because this is about harm reduction, not condemnation. If you choose to use, the goal is to stay informed, be prepared, and use as safe as possible, which can all add to the pleasure that you're seeking. That means knowing your limits, planning ahead, and having the right tools like protection, hydration, Narcan, and a plan to check in with yourself and your partners. Keep the conversation open, honest, and friendly. This approach helps everyone feel respected and supported no matter their choices. And if you do use alone, remember this, you don't have to be completely alone. Consider using the Never Use Alone phone hotline. Someone can stay on the phone with you to help keep you safe. So take care of yourself, take care of each other, and keep it friendly, because safety and support should always come first.
Pride lives here.
What an incredible conversation. A huge thank you to Sydney Alvarez for sharing such a personal story and reminding us that healing isn't about forgetting the past. It's about finding the strength to write the next chapter.
And of course, thank you to Billy for bringing us another thoughtful interview and for continuing to share the stories that make our community stronger.
If today's conversation meant something to you, we'd love for you to help us grow. Follow the Gay PHX podcast wherever you're listening, leave us a review, and share this episode with someone who could use a little more encouragement today.
Don't forget to visit gayphx.com for hundreds of LGBTQ plus events happening across Arizona. And if you'd like to learn more about Amory Pack or join us at an upcoming event, you can find us at amorypack.com.
We're so grateful you chose to spend a little of your day with us.
Until next time, take care of yourselves.
Take care of each other.
And we'll see you around the community. Bye, everyone. We're together. The sun is bright, and there's nowhere better than by your side. We're together. The sun is bright, and there's nowhere better than by your side.
Thanks for hanging out with the Gay PHX podcast.
Be kind.
Be bold.
Be you.